for the right, without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this, that one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable stars.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke program on the Rinse Radio Network, reaching out to the entire world with truth and principles of freedom and independence for all people. This is an important day. We're one day late here, but I want to acknowledge a very important and in some ways an horrific, horrific anniversary, because on May 14th, yesterday, Israel turned 64 years old. And I have a very fine article by Adrian Salbucci of Argentina, and he quotes from the famous Beatles song, you know, "Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64? Memorable words sung by Paul McCartney and John Lennon in the late 60s. And if Israel's founders, as Salbucci says, had asked the Western powers that question back in 1948, the answer then and now would be a powerful and resounding yes, and we are still feeding them, and we are still taking care of them at the age of 64. Very fine article. Take a look at it. I think you'll enjoy it. And in recognition of that birthday, I would like to give us the quote of the day, and I posted this. And, you know, I didn't have this quote in My Awakening. And I miss this quote. I've got a heck of a lot of wonderful quotes by Jewish extremists that are so revealing. Now, in our media, before I give you this quote, let's take for a moment a look at the way the media and the defenders of Israel frame the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. It's always that the Jews are victims. Oh, they're victims of Palestinian terrorism, Palestinian attacks, Palestinian evil of some kind or another. When they attacked the Freedom Flotilla on the Mediterranean in international waters against international law, and they attacked them with guns, they shot and killed eight people, people that didn't have any guns. They were talking about how horrible these were. They were violating the Zionist right to strangle the people of Gaza. Here's the people of Gaza who were behind a huge wall, and Israel patrols the borders, and Israel actually embargoes the whole place, doesn't even allow any goods and services to come in without a huge tax. But the tax doesn't go for the people of Gaza. The tax goes for the Zionist powers, right? But it's the people of Flotilla and the people that believe these people shouldn't be strangled that is created as the evil people. And you see these incredible diatribes in the media all the time about, you know, the conflict, but they keep forgetting one thing. And let me give you this quote from David Ben-Gurion. Now, David Ben-Gurion was, of course, the main founder of Israel, the first president of Israel. And this is not somebody on the Palestinian side. This is the founder of Israel. And this is what he wrote in his own memoirs, page 36. And I quote, "I don't understand your optimism," he declared. "Why should the Arabs make peace? If I were an Arab leader, I would never make terms with Israel. That is natural. We have taken their country." There has been anti-Semitism, he goes on. The Nazis, Hitler, Auschwitz. Boy, isn't it always the Nazis, Hitler, Auschwitz for every crime they commit? But Was that their fault? He says, was that the Palestinians' fault? They see only one thing. We have come here and stolen their country. Why should they accept that? They may perhaps forget it in one or two generations' time, but for the moment, there is no chance. So it's simple. We have to stay strong and maintain a powerful army. In other words, we've got to force this tyranny, this theft upon the Palestinian people. And that's the words of, and that was my words at the very end there, forcing the theft. But these are the words, of course, of David Ben-Gurion, the first president of Israel, probably more than any other, the man who was the George Washington of Israel, even though I'd hate to use the name George Washington and Ben-Gurion in the same breath. I also want you to notice something that he said very interestingly. He said maybe they'll forget in a generation or two. And you know, what they've done is they've made conditions so bad for the Palestinians that many, of course, have fled. And they've fled to Western nations. They've fled to Europe and America. And to a great extent, they've intermarried and been assimilated into Europe and America. Now, there's a reason why Israel has supported this kind of immigration to Europe and America, not just from the standpoint that it's weakened in terms of the solidarity of the European and American people, because here you have a tribe aiming to get control over the media, over the government, over the finances of Europe and over America. And obviously, it's important for them to make those societies into more of a Tower of Babel, because they know that with their intense ethnocentrism, their intense sense of loyalty and peoplehood and identity, and 2,000 years of saying that we're the chosen people and we have a God-given right, and those even that aren't religious, again, believe this in the supernatural, practically, ability or the countenance of the Jewish people. They literally have stood together as a team, and obviously a united and powerful team in a mixed society, in a conflicted society, in a multicultural, multiracial society. Easily they could play the groups off against each other, and that's exactly what they have done. But also it's easily seen here that obviously if Palestinians who go to Europe or America, if they marry and they live in another country, their children grow up with a different language, obviously their ties and their commitment to Palestinian issues are not going to be great. Whereas the Jewish community, you know, has the 6 million thing they broadcast every year to the whole world and to their own folks to keep them in line and to keep them afraid. And it's this intense religious belief that goes directly with the idea of preserving and advancing the Jewish people as literally the lineage of God. That's what they really say. And they speak up. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. This is how this whole process is working. I'm glad to say the Palestinians have not forgotten in one or two generations' time. But of course, we in America, we have forgotten. We have been trained very effectively by the media to forget our past, to forget and just and to essentially lose our sense of identity and family and culture. In fact, they've attacked the family. They've attacked our heritage. They've made many of our own people hate themselves. And the truth is that not only have the Europeans suffered from this, but the Palestinians have suffered because we don't have our identity and because we are not seeking the interests of our own people, the values of our own people, and the decency our own people have developed, especially over time. Because Europeans certainly have been guilty, as all people have, of human rights violations. The world had a different standard. And it wasn't just Europeans. It was every race upon the planet basically engaged in imperialism. Nations did, peoples did, ethnic groups did. Religions were basically saying to each other that we have the right to dominate, that we are the one true way. And this has always gone on in history. But today, the world, I think, accepts, in spite of the propaganda, accepts the idea that every people should have control of their own values, their own economy, their own currency, their own interests. And today I'm going to welcome back, and I do welcome back a very fine, a man I consider a scientist. And I think that we call a lot of these areas, you know, my degree and my PhD is in history. That's really more of, it's not so much of a science, but I grew up as a young man wanting to be a scientist. And I'd like to believe that we should try to think scientifically about everything. And we have with us a man who is a fine chemist, a man who knows physics to a great degree, a man who has the scientific method. And today I'm going to let him speak for quite a while. I will kind of interrogate him and ask him and questions, hopefully, that will be pertinent. And his article, you can find his article on davidduke.com, which is a very fine article, by the way, on the money syndrome, on what's going on in terms of how the money structure and economic structure is made in this country. And I'd like him to give us a synopsis of that, and then I will ask him some questions. We'll certainly engage in a discussion through the length of this program on this and any other subjects that come up. Gemma Rudolph, good to have you with us again. Our people have really enjoyed your presence on the program. I want to tell you that I've heard from dozens and dozens of people all over the world, in fact, of many nationalities, that I've really appreciated. Many people told me the last few days that your analysis of the Holocaust as a new religion is one of the most insightful ideas they've ever heard, and they can see how it's such a powerful weapon they use, not only for the destruction of the Palestinian interest and their domination of the West, but also their domination of globalism and the other negative aspects of that, as well as the economies of the world. So welcome back.
Yes, thank you for having me again.
Well, you know, we're glad to have you. And you're one of the most articulate voices that I know of and one of the most knowledgeable. So let's go ahead. I'd like you to go ahead and please speak as long as you want. All we got to do is break for commercials. But Give us a basic introduction to the idea of the money syndrome and the things you learned when you read this fantastic economic scientist while you were in the gulags of Germany.
Yes, as you mentioned, I read it actually while I was in prison. A number of people sent me books on a variety of topics, and one of them was also about the money and why the international financial system is going upside down. Now, that was in 2006. It's 2 years before the meltdown. Gave me time enough to rethink things and actually warn my wife what's coming, and she agreed that I knew it 2 years before it was actually coming. Now, why did I see it? Most people actually focus only on the misery, the financial misery of their own country, and they may see a couple of other countries like the ones that are in the headlines, like Greece or Iceland, when they go belly up. But if you look actually at the financial data of almost every country in the world, it does pretty much look the same everywhere. Public debt is going slowly but surely through the roof in all the countries, including countries like Japan that is particularly burdened with public debt. That's even worse than in America or in many countries in Europe. And the question is, why is that so? You could understand why impoverished nations in the third world have that problem, but why are nations like even Germany, that has this huge foreign trade exchange surplus every year? It's a world record holder of foreign trade excess for the last two or three decades, much higher than even China has. Why does even Germany struggle with public debt problems and debt problems in general? So you get a feeling that there's something wrong in general. And to get a feeling that it's not just about public debt, you need to know, as background information perhaps, that in most countries, public debt is the thing that people talk about most, because it's about politics, it's in the media, it's what taxpayers obviously have to pay for. But private debt, consumer debt in particular, pretty much amounts to the same amount like the public debt. So you would have to put that on top as a burden a whole nation has to carry. Plus, add to this that corporate debt, that corporation that companies make, is actually in the order of magnitude of four times higher than the public debt. So take the public debt, multiply it by six, and you have the total debt that the average developed nation, be it America, Germany, Italy, Greece, you name them, has to carry, and it's growing. Now, why is that so? As a matter of fact, if you look into the history of nations, there has always been public debt. There have been times when it got out of control, times when it got back under control. Germany is a very revealing example, because Germany got out from the Second World War with a complete new economy, with a complete new currency. They had, so to say, pressed the reset button and started all over. And by the end 1960s, they had no public debt at all, and private debt was minimal. People were actually saving money, and so they had kind of a clean slate, similar like Japan had, but they're in similar shape like everybody else today. So to understand that, I think to go back to the very basis, what I just
yeah, that's the question. I'm going to ask you a quick question there. Yeah, that's a very good point, because if Germany comes from absolutely nothing, right, after the Second World War, where people didn't, the currency was worthless, they had to rebuild entirely their cities, even the docks were stolen by the Allies, you know, the most modern docks they had in Germany at the time, anywhere were stolen, industry was to a great extent dismantled, people, you know, just they were ravaged in the country. And if Germany could build to the point to the 1960s where they had no public debt, where they had very little private debt, and they were, you know, economically feasible again and economically healthy, how do they go from that, from this horrific situation in 1945, to the case of massive public debt today without there something being wrong?
Yeah, considering that Germany is one of the richest nations and actually has foreign trade surpluses of immense numbers. So the question is, where does that money go if Germany, in trading with other countries, makes a surplus of hundreds of billions every year? In the meantime, it has gone over 100 billion. So it accumulates. Where does it go? Why does Germany have such huge corporate, private, and public debt? Because you need to always keep in mind, if somebody owes something, he owes it to somebody. So every debtor has a creditor. So if a nation has a debt, cumulative debt of public, private, and corporate of, say, $60 trillion, like is roughly the number in the United States, somebody is the creditor for this. We, as a taxpayer, as consumers, paying, basically ponying up the money of corporate debt, owe this money to some people. So who are these people? It's an interesting thing, a question to ask, because most people don't ask it. The government has huge debt, but who do they owe it to? Mm-hmm. Now, I can make it very simple to understand. Now, it gets later on a little bit more complicated, but it basically comes back to that truth. And it sounds perhaps too simple initially, but it is, I think, what it amounts to. And that is the following. People who have a surplus of money, that is the affluent or rich or whatever you want to call them, they can't consume all of their money. So what do they do with it? They lend it to somebody who wants it and get paid for it in return with some interest. Because otherwise, if they had no incentive to give it away, they wouldn't do it. So they get interest. So at the end of the day, these people who have more money than they need end up having even more money than they need, because they get money paid back eventually plus the interest. So the system is that the affluent get more affluent. And on the other hand, there's the guy, the average guy, who usually has a lack of money or thinks he wants more or, yeah, what does he do? He takes a loan but has to pay it back plus interest. So at the end of the equation, the indigent have less money than they had before. That's the dynamics of interest.
Now, the highest rates of interest, is a little comment. The highest rates of interest, obviously, are at the very lowest end of the spectrum. The people that have the huge credit card debts and the huge interest are the poorest elements of our society. Mm-hmm. They get trapped into it, and also the people that have to borrow money basically before they get their paycheck to pay their food bill and to feed their children. When they get those short-term loans, those are the highest interest rates, sometimes up to 36% legally. So yes, you know, very, very, very prescient comment. Yeah. You know, it's the people who pay the highest interest rates are really the people who are struggling the most, right?
That's right. And I said in our last talk show that if you have a small debt, it's your problem. If you have a big debt like the corporations have, it's the bank's problem. And
if the banks have a problem, we pay for it, right? And tax and more taxes, right?
Yeah, that's right. So now it may sound like I'm generally opposed to people getting interest or having to pay interest, but that's not the point. There is, of course, a freedom to negotiate conditions under which I borrow or lend money. And that's something that is up to the free market within certain boundaries. Now, what are these boundaries? And that's what the problem is right now. Right now, we always have only positive interest rates. That means basically anyone who brings money to the bank or buys shares from a company expects, of course, to get some interest to cover loss by inflation or to get even more out of it. And the only way, if you borrow money to we are pro break, so I would say
you're right. And ladies and gentlemen, this is a fascinating discussion, and I'm so interested in hearing the whole rest of it. We'll probably go the whole hour on this subject. Sometimes economics is pretty dry, but I tell you, Gamer is giving it to us in a very understandable and a wonderful way for all of us to understand and deal with this very vital issue for you and your family. Back in a moment, and with Gamer Rudolph on the economy and the economic system, the money system.
And the world will be better for this. That one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable stars.
Are you suffering from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeats, clogged arteries? If so, you are not alone. Millions of people are suffering from one or more of these problems. If you'd like to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then this might be the most important message you'll ever hear. An effective 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available. Heart and Body Extract is an exclusive formula of wild-crafted and organic herbs. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Get your Heart and Body Extract today by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305, or heartandbody.com.
If you're taking 1, 2, 5, or more nutritional supplements, please stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food supplement you can buy. Men, women, children, even Olympic athletes the world over have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. And now take just one nutritional supplement instead of many. The Bio Superfood formulas are whole food products composed with four of the most nutrient-dense algae found on Earth. Bio Superfood for the brain helps with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. If you can increase brain health, the rest of the body is a no-brainer. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity and is safe for you and your family. Learn more and order your Bio Superfood formulas at BioAge.com, spelled BioAge.com, BioAge.com, or call 877-288-9116. That's 877-288-9116. BioAge, the age of advanced organics.
Let's keep on looking for the light. Oh, can't you see the morning after? It's waiting right outside the storm. Why don't we cross the bridge together and find the place that's safe and warm? It's not too late. We should begin.
Okay, folks, we're back with Gamma Rudolph. And remember, we have this program on our archives and available on our archives to you, your family, your friends all over the world. Just send them a link, and you'll be able to hear this program in just a few moments after the show is over. We're now talking about the economy, and we're talking about the money system and interest and this type of thing, a very, very critical topic. For a lot of people, they find economics boring. I think this is a fascinating subject that we must go into. I think we've got to remember, and I see mankind more as a moral and a spiritual being than an economic being. But the truth is, you've got to have basic economics, just like you've got to have and good economic principles to run a state, just like you've got to have a good diet for the human body to be healthy. You've got to have good exercise. You have to have a good environment. And you have to have a good economic environment for these things to operate. And today, Germer is giving us some details on how the inherent structure of this system, by the way, I must say, which was set up to a great extent by those same usual suspects I talk about almost every day, why this system is inherently damaging. And we'll go into that in a little bit. But let's go ahead and continue with Germer and let him go ahead and speak to us about the more of the basic foundations of this issue. Go ahead, Mr.
Yeah, thank you. I stopped with the talking about people borrowing money, losing automatically because they have not only to pay back what they borrow, but pay interest too. Now, there is one way of not losing that kind of system. That is, if you invest the money you've borrowed into something that gives you a higher return than what you owe as interest. That's the way you can come out with a gain. Now, that's, of course, what most corporations do. They borrow money and in order to invest it to get a profit that covers not only what they have to pay back, but also the interest. What that amounts to at the end, if you look at it on the level of an economic, of a national economy, is that you have to have an increase in profits, an increase in turnover. Basically, on an economic level, it means, a national level, it means an increase in the gross domestic product that covers the increase in debt that a country incurs by interest. So basically, what that means is economic growth has to be at least as strong as the average market interest rates for loans.
So in other words, static leads to ruin under this system is what you're saying.
Yeah. So what that means is basically if the economic growth in the country, that is the amount of money that is kind of produced, or the value that is produced is less than the interest rates on the loans, then debt climbs faster than the wealth. And this is how things get out of control. So under this system with always positive interest rates, we are condemned to have positive growth. That's, of course, one of the paradigms of our economic system. Growth is good. Growth is needed. The problem is here, with a little bit of mathematical background, the interest rates we're talking about, compounded interest in particular, is an exponential function. Now, that's theoretically something that everybody should have heard in school somewhere in high school, what an exponential function is. As a matter of fact, it is a function that there's no other mathematical function that grows faster than an exponential function. It goes completely out of control. I've in my article made a reference to an old riddle that says that a pharaoh here had a guy who helped him, and he promised him he would reward him. And the guy said, "Well, I want you to put one grain of wheat on the first field of a chess board, and then double the amount with every field." And the Pharaoh thought, well, that's not a problem. I have plenty of wheat. But if you do that calculation at 64 fields on a chessboard, the amount is 2 to the power of 64 minus 1. That's the figure you get out of it. That's the dynamics of an exponential function. That is a function that doubles its amount ever so often. And we're talking about interest. That's the same thing. So the Pharaoh ended up having to pay the guy wheat, a cube of the length of 5 miles high, long, and deep.
Well, it's no accident of the tribal identity of the guy that told him that.
Yeah, well, that may be. That is an interest function. And when we say we have to have economic growth to be able to cover the debt that we constantly incur, that means that we are condemned to always rip off, use more and more of the resources that this planet actually has. The planet is a limited system, so you cannot have unlimited growth within a limited system. Therefore, and that's what we see everywhere, we ruin nature, we plunder our resources, and there are already the scares written on the walls that saying we are running out of oil, we're running out of phosphorus, we're going to run out of silver, we're going to run out of this and that, if we keep going and even having a continuous growth. But within this system, we need growth, which, by the way, is also an explanation why we have mass illegal immigration. The United States has a stable economic growth because it has a stable population growth. The old resident population of mainly whites is not reproducing anymore, actually shrinking in numbers. Under this system that we have that needs growth to survive, the only way to solve the problem is importing human beings to make the population grow so that the economy grows. And that's also the problem that countries in Europe have with collapsing, demographically collapsing countries. They import the masses of people because big corps of the system, the financial system, needs at least stability, if not growth, to maintain.
So, isn't it interesting how that the same powers that control the media, and by the way, who support this financial system, lock, stock, and barrel, are the same people who've told Europeans that they should have feminism, that they should opt not having families or opt even to homosexual relationships which don't produce children, opt for selfishness, really, a moral so that you don't give of yourself to children, that children are a burden. How many movies show that? How many television programs show that? While at the same time advocating massive immigration into Europe and the West of the Western nations. That's kind of interesting from that standpoint. Yep. But these companies are kind of in a spot then, because for them to exist with the money they've borrowed, right? They basically are forced to do something to help the population grow so they can increase their expansion. If they're a corporation, they need to sell more of their products. If they're, say, a building company, they got to build more buildings or more houses or apartments. If they're a food company, they got to sell more food. So they're kind of in a situation like a catch-22 that if they don't do this, if the economic system remains the same with the same with the interest, they're stuck with basically coming down on the side of mass immigration, aren't they, in terms of an economic self-interest, not in terms of the well-being of the country overall.
That's right. So coming back to the example of Germany, you can see in Germany how the redistribution of wealth from poor to rich, which the interest system actually is all about. As I've said, the poor get poorer, the richer get richer. That means constantly in the system, wealth is redistributed from poor to rich. If you have an economic growth that is lower than the average interest rate, you can see that in the economic development in Germany, starting in the 70s and 80s, when economic growth in Germany slowed down and dropped under the average market loan interest rates, that at that point, the monetary assets of the rich grew. The gross domestic product slowed down, and the average net salaries, that's basically the money that we, the not so affluent, do get, goes down. That means you have it very clearly. The rich get richer, the poor gets poorer. And you can see it in the economic data of the nation when this tipping point is reached. And that's what we have everywhere. So what we need is a system that allows us to have average interest rates of zero. People should be allowed to negotiate under which conditions they lend and borrow money, but the state should have the power to enforce an average interest rate of zero so that you don't get ripped off from this system.
Okay, we've got another break coming up, a real quick one. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Yemmer Rudolph explaining to us and educating every one of us on some of the basic economic principles and why the economy of our nations are going down, not just in America, but all over Europe, in fact, all over the world. We'll talk in a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen.
It's not too late. We should be giving.
This is David Duke again. I was wondering if you have seen yet my videos and documentaries. On my particular channel, I now have 4.5 million views. It's pretty amazing. But even more amazing is that hundreds of people have taken it upon their own initiative to take my lectures, my debates, my appearances, my broadcasts, and make videos out of them, independent videos. And now there are over 6,000 videos of my appearances and my work. Well over 250 million views worldwide and growing. My videos have an average of over 90% positive ratings. Please go to my website, davidduke.com, and check out my videos, subscribe, and please tell your friends and relatives about this program. You and I together can change the world.
Remember this name, Carnivora. That's Carnivora. .com. What if I told you that this 100% pure and natural product was delivered directly to the White House at President Reagan's personal request at a time when only the president was able to obtain it? Reagan used this amazing product, Carnivora, successfully, a product derived only from nature that has the intelligence to instinctively attack abnormal cells only without harming a single normal cell, and the power to actually wake up critical immune cells from dormancy to attack foreign invaders that don't belong in our bodies. Carnivora is now obtainable by anyone who wants to get healthy and stay that way. Call 1-866-VENUS-FLY and protect yourself with 17 naturally occurring compounds that will unleash powerful immune defense. That's 1-866-VENUS-FLY. Call 1-866-VENUS-FLY and get your Carnivora today. Visit carnivora.com.
Hello, this is David Duke. I want to give you a free gift of an audio edition of my worldwide bestseller, My Awakening. This book is about awakening to the real world, exposing the lies of the Zionist-controlled media. Now, putting my 740-page book into audio was a huge task. It's the length of at least 10 typical audio books. But I promise it will keep you on the edge of your seat, and it's like a college education on these issues. To download the book completely free, you must use a file share program like uTorrent. Details are on my website. Or you can order the book on a DVD data disc for $20. I also have a beautiful hardback edition available at $35, the same price as Amazon, but ordering from my office helps us more, and you may value the fact that I personally autograph each copy. I guarantee that after you finish this book, you will never again see the world in the same way.
There must be something worth living for. There must be something worth trying for. Even something's worth dying for. And if one man can stand tall, there must be hope for us all.
Okay, folks, I'm here with Yemmer Rudolph, and we're discussing the economy and the currency system And I think we still have a long way to go. Remember now, we've got the archives available. This is a show you might want to listen to yourself in addition to sending to your friends and neighbors, because I think it's very vital that all of our people have a very fundamental understanding of how the economy works and some of the inherent flaws in the way the economic system, which was designed, by the way, by our traditional, by the traditional enemies of European mankind, in fact, the mankind of all the earth. And I think it's very important we understand how this mechanism works to their benefit, the benefit of the very richest and the most powerful elements, and the detriment of the great middle class of America and the hard-working staple of this planet. Okay, let's go back. Gamera, go ahead and continue with your discussion, because I'm learning a lot, and I know that our listeners are as well.
Yes. Perhaps one short explanation of, because I've been talking about rich people and poor people, we should find a definition under the current system, who's losing out and who is actually winning. And you can look at economic data, make the calculations, and the book that I read by a German professor of economics made the calculations. The numbers are a little bit outdated, I think 10 years old, but we can extrapolate from that. Now, what does it mean? We all have to pay interest. We, of course, have to pay interest of loans we have taken ourselves, some of us, not all. But then we always have to pay interest to the government with the taxes we pay, with guns, government guns drawn. We can't get out of this. Whether we voted for the president to throw away $800 billion or not, we have to pay the interest. We are forced by it. What we don't see, for instance, is the fact that a lot of the consumer prices that we pay have interest payments tagged onto them, because, as I said, the corporate debt is four times as high roughly as a government debt, and they add the interest that they have to pay on their loans on top of the consumer prices. So if you take all of this together and consider how much that is per year that you have, that you are automatically paying knowingly or unknowingly in interest rates in this system, how much money would you have to bring to a bank and invest it to get as much interest back as you have to automatically, forcibly pay within the system? And I think around 2000, it was something like $200,000. And I may have risen by now by $250,000 or $300,000. So in other words, that's the limit. If you do not have at least $300,000, say roughly $300,000 in the bank earning good interest rates, you are losing in the system and getting poorer every day on average. Now, of course,
but $200,000 in relation to what? I don't quite understand.
Well, if you have less than $200,000 in the bank, the interest you get from whatever you have in the bank is less than the interest you pay in hidden or in open payments, be it taxes, your own average private loan, or the consumer debt that has interest on it. Consumer prices that have interest in it.
Well, another question is, what percentage of that, of the productivity of a nation,
It means roughly that we're talking about the upper 10% of the population, which still get more out of the system than they pay in. So 90% of the population get poorer every day, and this percentage is shrinking, because the limit with rising debt, national debt, is, of course, rising as well. That means in 5 or 10 years from now, it may be 500,000. It rises faster than the inflation rate. So historically seen, the people who win in the system get have always shrunk and keep shrinking.
Well, we can see that, of course, in the fact that and all the major media has to even admit that the middle class, the staple middle class, we're not talking about the people who are sick or on welfare, have mental problems or physical problems, or retired, but the middle class has shrunk dramatically over the last 30 years, both in America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and throughout Europe. So, you know, we know this is happening. Let me ask you a question. What's the percentage, or do you know the approximate percentage of overall productivity that's paid with this, that's really extracted from the economy with this interest system?
I've read something. It depends very much on the sector we're talking about. And I can't remember if I've seen an overall average, but we are talking probably in the
if you say the GNP, for instance, say the gross national
of a good quarter to a third of it is in the meantime devoted to paying interest.
Now,
so
good question.
That's just interest slavery. We're all in this. You know, in medieval times, you borrowed money directly from a rich person. You knew who was ripping you off. Today, it's completely anonymous. You have the bank as the middleman, or you have a broker, or, of course, you get the tax bill, and it doesn't say it's payment to the rich. Public debt basically is payment to the rich because somebody borrows, the government borrows. That is, we taxpayer borrow, and borrow from whom? Whoever buys government shares, that's rich people, either rich countries abroad or rich people in this country. So no matter what interest you pay, you always most likely pay to some rich person without knowing it.
All right, let's go further. I want to ask you about that for a second. You were saying the top 10%, then the wealthiest, get most of this process. But obviously, if someone's making or has $200,000 in the bank, which may qualify for the 10% in terms of America or other Western countries, and they may be in the plus side. That would have to for a great deal of that 10%, probably 90% of that 10%, maybe 95%, maybe 96% of that 10% would account for probably 95% of that entire. The money made from this interest rate. I mean, we're really looking at the people at the very, very top, the people with billions and trillions are companies, banks, international banks. That's no wonder Goldman Sachs and banks like that are so rich and so predatory.
That's true.
So we're really talking about a very, very tiny percentage of the population that has the real power there, not just the people with $200,000 in the bank.
The people who have $300,000, you're just – coming out even without making a loss, and the share of people who have a few hundred thousand invested somewhere, they are not the problem. We are talking about people that have millions or even billions of dollars and who keep investing and reinvesting. They could never actually even consume the interest, so they bring the interest back to the bank. And the bank in turn has to get people who they lend the money to, because the banks have to earn the interest before they can give it away to others. So that's why they loosened, made it more and more easy for people to get into debt, because they needed slaves to work for the rich, and because the rich wanted to invest their money. Now, historically speaking,
go ahead. Yeah, I was going to say we've explained the problem. I just want to say we've only got about 3 or 4 minutes today. Sure, we might have to do it again tomorrow because we need to go into some of the solutions. But do you want to talk about some more basics today, and then maybe solutions? Tomorrow,
historically, maybe I just, because you mentioned where it's coming from, interest and compounded interest is the problem, but not as such. It's actually about positive interest. If the government uses the leverage to get the average interest level down to zero, we are fine. Then people can negotiate their rates. Historically seen, both Christianity and Islam have outlawed taking interest on loans. That was illegal in the medievals up to the 17th, 18th century. And even Jews actually among themselves were not allowed to take interest on loans, but Jews were always allowed to take interest from loans given to Gentiles. And that's what they did. They had an advantage compared to anyone else in the host countries where they lived, because mostly they were Christians or Muslims and they weren't allowed to take interest. So Jews took over the money sector, historically seen, and were perfectly allowed to rip off of Gentiles. And they did it, historically seen. A lot of revolts and pogroms against Jews was because the Gentiles felt ripped off, or were ripped off. And the head start they had, historically seen, of course, on the other hand, they were not allowed to do normal trades for other reasons. So they were kind of pushed in this niche, and they took advantage of it. And historically seeing the head start they have had over the centuries, they have never actually lost to this day. That's why they have this huge power in finances, and they are the ones who most benefit from it and will defend the system, which actually allows them to earn money without doing anything. Just lean back and let the money work. Money doesn't work. It's us who are working and paying them. So if money works, that means some of us is slaving to pay the rich and super rich. and that's not a good thing. Jews are
interesting.
A big part of
it. We've only got a few seconds, Gamera, unfortunately, in the show. I think you're available this week. Let's talk again about the economy. Let's talk about a lot of solutions, a lot of issues about this in relation to the economy. We'll go into depth about the environment, if you like. We'll go into depth about how wars also are something that stimulate the need for interest and the growth that they talk about, or some sort of expenditure which fuels those economies. If you'd like to, we'll come back tomorrow and we'll talk about those things. Is that all right with you?
Yes, we can do that indeed.
Well, I think it's a good idea. We need to go in depth. I want to explain to people, and I want you to explain to people how this really damages the environment and our social fabric in so many ways. And by the way, the interest rates where the society is a good example is Venezia, where they limited the interest rates to a very small and reasonable amount. They even say this, the Jewish historians say that there was not as much, quote, anti-Semitism. So in the next show, let's talk about, you know, what is a reasonable amount, not as so much interest, but as a fee or some sort of a charge for a reasonable risk of capital. If someone gives capital for some sort of an investment or a house, people should have some sort of insurance that they don't lose their capital. That is understandable. What is a reasonable amount, and how much, and where is the breaking point where society is damaged in these kinds of things? We'll talk about, or should there be any interest at all? We'll talk about that tomorrow. Ladies and gentlemen, I've had with me Gamera Rudolph. Thank you, Gamera. You've always been great. You really explain very complex matters in a very reasonable way to people. Thanks so much for being with me again today, and we'll be back with you tomorrow. Is that okay?
It is okay. Thank you for having me.
Very good. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back tomorrow. We're getting a lot of people listening to this program. Keep on listening and remember the archives. Bye now.
This is David Duke again. I was wondering if you have seen yet my videos and documentaries. On my particular channel, I now have 4.5 million views. It's pretty amazing. But even more amazing is that hundreds of people have taken it upon their own initiative to take my lectures, my debates, my appearances, my broadcasts, and make videos out of them, independent videos. And now there are over 6,000 videos of my appearances and my work, well over 250 million views worldwide and growing. My videos have an average of over 90% positive ratings. Please go to my website, davidduke.com, and check out my videos, subscribe, and please tell your friends and relatives about this program. You and I together can change the world.
When it comes to silver and gold investing, you have to go with somebody you trust, somebody who understands financial planning, economics, and history. In the late 1990s, Paul Drockton predicted that gold and silver would be the number one growth investment opportunity of the future, and he was right on the mark. Paul began helping his clients and friends make the conversion, and instead of losing money, they have all realized returns as high as 300%. Paul Drockton is now forecasting massive returns on gold and silver bullion in the coming months. Paul's foresight and vision were 2020, and his track record is perfect. You can email him at pdrockton@aol.com. That's Drockton, D-R-O-C-K-T-O-N. And let Paul help you. There is still time. So email Paul for a completely free, no-strings consultation at pdrockton@aol.com.
You're listening.